Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and this is Media Talk. Coming up, as Michael Grade announces his decision to step down as ITV's chief executive, we ask, was yesterday's man ever the right person for the television of tomorrow? Plus,
David Cameron's here for an hour, he's taking your calls. Then we've got Ali Ross, our TV critic, Trevor Kavanagh, George Pascoe Watson, and even the pastry girls. Not all at once.
John Gaunt takes to the airwaves on The Sun's new audio stream. We discuss the next generation of the radio phone-in. Also in the podcast, what does Alistair Darling's economic master plan mean for digital Britain? And
I've never been given the chance before, but here's hoping it'll change.
As Susan Boyle's star goes global, we'll discuss the seedier side of her rise to tabloid fame. This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Now, I was going to make a joke about Culture Secretary Andy Burnham's unfortunate incident at Euston Station this week, but I'm afraid I left the script on the train. You know how it is. Anyway, our two panellists are no mere strangers on a train. Emily Bell is the Guardian's Director of Digital Content. Long time no see, Emily.
Yes, indeed. I'm just passing through to extend your St Pancras metaphor.
Thank you very much. Stephen Brooke is Media Guardian's Press and Publishing Correspondent. You're looking full of the joys of spring, Brookie. Is there something you'd like to share with the rest of the class?
Things are fine. I've just spent 90 minutes with Paul Dacre in a parliamentary committee hearing, so I think I'm just delighted to be out of there.
Great. Gareth McLean makes his return to the pod a little later, but we'll start this week with a shake-up at ITV.
Media Talk from Guardian.co.uk.
Yes, hold the front page. ITV has begun its search for a new chief executive after Michael Grade announced he was standing down from the position he's held since 2007. He'll stay on at the company as non-executive chairman, but he'll leave a legacy of shrinking audiences and a rock-bottom share price. Now, I've already ruled myself out of the running, but Emily, the timing of this, has it come as something of a surprise?
No. Given that Michael Grade, I think, was hinting that he was intending to give up one of his executive roles.
Because he was, of course, executive chairman
and chief right. executive. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
And that's a lot of executiving.
It's a lot of executiving, which I think that everybody has now agreed is not perhaps what he is best at, or as they say, detail. And I think that he was originally hinting that he would probably do this about a year ago. So the fact that it's happened now, you know, the timing of these things you can never be sure of, I don't think it's that much a surprise. Also, two other things. There are a couple of things on the horizon for the ITV takeover or rights issue, and I don't know that Michael Grade was a necessary thing as an ITV shareholder. If you were one, you don't necessarily want him in the chair for either of those.
Although Mediaset, which has been rumoured, this is Silvio Berlusconi's Italian broadcaster, they were rumoured to be in the running, but they have apparently now ruled themselves out, haven't they?
I think this has all been a bit mishandled because obviously, you know, ITV, terrible share price, and rumours come and go. And I think earlier in this week, the Mediaset rumours were hot, so the share price soared. After this announcement, it's gone.
We say soared.
Well, percentage wise, it's soared, which I is about 5p. Yeah, yeah. But when Grade.
Cap bounce.
When Grade arrived, and this is what I think they've done badly, he arrived and they said, yes, he's going to be executive chairman for about 3 years, which what would have taken him up to the end of this year. Then they came back, I think about a year ago, and said, no, he's going to do it for a bit longer now, which is going to take us to the end of 2010. Now they've come up and they've gone back to plan A, but without announcing the successor. So I think if they really wanted to make this announcement and step forward to the future, they should have had their ducks in a row.
To me, that speaks of some kind of imperative behind the scenes. And again, the pressure will come from the shareholders or from an external timetable thing. Now, the media, you know, Mediaset have ruled themselves out, so you can't rule yourself out in, on to the stock exchange and then immediately put yourselves back in. So they're out of it at least for the medium term. But before the rumours broke, a much higher volume of ITV shares had been traded in the market, which is always the kind of blood in the water, if you like, just before a takeover. So, who knows? The markets was funny things, but it is entirely possible. Well, we know that ITV is in play, but yes. It is just possible.
I was going to say, if not Mediaset, then who?
Well, we all know that there is a set of sort of slightly kind of loopy plans circulating at the moment about whether or not, you know, sort of Channel 4, Channel 5, ITV or...
No, not that again.
Well, you know, it is spent swimmers clinging together by which they choke each other's hearts. Sorry for introducing Shakespeare.
The wildest ITV rumour that has passed the Media Guardian desk in the past 3 months has been Al Jazeera.
Sorry, to laugh.
It is quite good. You can use Al Jazeera, yes. Sylvie Berlusconi. I still like the idea of Liz Murdoch. I still think Shine is big enough to buy ITV now.
I still
like that idea.
I love it.
We were a bit. I was a bit, to be quite honest, cruel about Michael Grade in my intro in relation to his legacy. Could anybody?
You were actually, because those things you mentioned are not really his fault.
Could anyone else have done any better? It was a pretty bad. It was a tough gig, wasn't it?
It was a tough gig. And I think that we sometimes big ourselves up for how right we got things. I remember us discussing this subject just before he was appointed, and I was saying, wouldn't it be great if Dawn Airey and Michael Grade ran ITV? And now we know the answer to that is no. We were wrong about that. I think that actually Grade is a great talent manager. He's, you know, a great sort of instinctive TV person. That the era that ITV is in now does not need those skills in that position. What yes. it actually needs is somebody who can be very, very sort of hardcore and detailed about the financials. And so for this period, I think he was completely the wrong person, as it turned out. And actually, somebody else probably could have done a better job. And also, he did make himself chairman and chief executive, which is really suboptimal in any corporate structure. You just shouldn't have that.
Does that mean just a bad idea?
Bad idea. Suboptimal is a technical term.
That was the only way that it was Peter Burt, wasn't it, was able to tempt him across from the BBC. I don't think he would have moved unless it was for a ton of money and that joint position. Look, I think he got some, you know, talented executives around him, and definitely programming improved. And he did a good job there, but as Emily said, that's not what ITV needs. It needs it, but it's not all it needs.
Yeah. That's the key thing. It's not all it needs. And I think that there's a mistaken perception. And again, I think in our commentary, sometimes we were mistaken about this, about saying, you know, what ITV really needs is good programmes. And actually, that's probably about 45% of what it needs.
Thank you very much. There'll be more on ITV later in the podcast, but to give us your thoughts on the Michael Grade legacy and maybe suggestions for a successor, post a comment on the blog at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. Now then, Stephen, we all know you're a fan of Brian Matthews' Sounds of the 60s on Radio 2, so obviously fan of classy radio, yes?
Yes.
How about this?
Sun Talk with John Gaunt, the home of free speech.
And a very good morning to you. Here we are then, it's Sun Talk, the home of free speech. It's Gaunty with you right through till 1 o'clock. We've got David Cameron. Is he ready to be the next Prime Minister of this great country?
That's the sound of shock jock and Sun columnist John Gaunt kicking off Sun Talk Radio, the new home of free speech, Stephen.
So he's told me this week, and I am admitting that I have been listening to him, yes, yeah. If that was your next question.
and your thoughts?
Well, it takes me back because, you know, I'm not from these parts, and where I am from has a very different regulatory system, so we don't particularly have very biased newspapers, but we have a lot of fantastic commercial talkback radio. Mm. Where people are allowed to volubly express their opinions.
And this is where you get your inspiration from, obviously.
Indeed, my favourite programme was a guy called John Laws, who used to introduce himself, "Hello world, this is John Laws." I think Gaunty could steal that.
Yes, absolutely.
It's very much his thing.
Well, anyway, Gaunty's guests at the start of the week ranged from David Cameron to Esther Ranson and to The Sun's showbiz editor, Gordon Smart. Now, he was in, John Gaunt, that is, not Gordon Smart, was in Guardian Towers this week as part of a Radio Academy discussion that we were hosting and discussing his new venture, as well as the broader issue of the evolution of radio. Here's what he had to say about his thinking behind Sun Talk.
I was driving the car, the Jaguar, from my country house to Milton Keynes, and we were about 15 minutes into the journey, and Bethany, my 13-year-old, was quiet in the back of the car. I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "I'm on the internet." I said, "You're on the fucking internet? It'll be costing me a fucking fortune. Turn it off now." To which she replied in a very posh, privately educated voice, "No, it won't, Daddy. It's an iPhone. It's included in the package that you bought me at Christmas." And then I realised that the revolution had arrived. She's on the phone and she's using her iPhone like we used a transistor radio. We used to lie in the bath, or we used to hide under the covers and pretend we were asleep and listen to Radio Luxembourg. Bethany can listen to any radio station she wants, whenever she wants, wherever she wants, for nothing. Do you remember when your dad used to say, "Get off that bloody phone, it's costing a fortune"? Do you remember when the internet started and you used to say, get off the laptop or the iMac, it's costing a fortune because you're on dial-up. Do you remember those days? And then broadband came. I don't know about you, we sit watching Britain's Got Talent. I'm on my laptop, the two kids are either on their iPhones or their laptops, Lisa's on her laptop doing her thesis or whatever. We're all on the internet. Why? Because it doesn't cost anything. It's included in the package. The moment that happens in mobile phones, radio, traditional radio, won't necessarily die, but it's going to be really, really taken on. One of the reasons we're doing it is because we've got this fantastic resource. And the way that phone-in radio works in Britain, certainly commercial phone-in radio works, is that people read The Sun, they read the Daily Mail, and they read the Telegraph, and they look at the stories that are breaking. And then normally they're on the way to work. The producer phones up and says, have you seen Page Six? Yes, let's do that. Let's get George Pascoe Watson on, or let's get Quentin Letts on, or whatever else, as the guests. So a lot of print journalists are already broadcasters, and they're already being used in that way. So I suppose what we've done at The Sun, we said, we've got this fantastic resource. And, you know, you said about our showbiz person this morning. We had a lineup this morning that most phone-ins would die for. You know, it started off with George Pascoe Watson, political editor of The Sun, talking about the budget. You know, we could have had Trevor Kavanagh, who's so close to the Labour Party over the last 20 to 20 odd years. We had John Kay talking about the terrorism thing, exactly the same. I was listening to Radio 5 on the way in, exactly the same as them. But here we had a man who's very close to Lord West, so he could give his side of it. And I thought going in there, a lot of print journalists would be very negative and think, oh, bloody hell, you know, we've just had some redundancies. You know, what is this? But actually, everybody in the Sun newsroom, and this is not spin, this is absolutely genuine, everybody has subscribed to it. Everybody's into it. Everybody is into the idea. Like Trevor Kavanagh, I thought he wouldn't want to do it. He's had an ISDN put into his house so he can appear every week.
John Gaunt. Now, by a freakish coincidence, Emily Bell was also on that panel with John Gaunt. So let's come to you first. What did you make of him? You had a bit of a ding-dong with him, didn't you?
Well, not at my behest. I thought he was rather lovely, and I said nice things about him.
He tried to
pick a fight with me, but he hadn't really understood my point. So at that point, I felt it was unfair to come back, because he said, call me stupid, but I don't know what you're saying. And I was going to say, well, actually, yeah, you know. I think that Sun Talk is great. I think that it creates a market in the mass market for sort of online, sort of broadband on-demand services. They're clearly taking our lead, and which actually John Gaunt did, you know, tip his hat to and say, because of, you know, The Guardian, this sort of thing, that's a great lead to take, which is where they make use of people who are, you know, in the Sun. It reinforces the brand, and it's as good as anything you hear on commercial radio. Of that type.
I mean, to be quite honest, it's because he has been unleashed from the restrictions, it is more clear what his proposition isn't it, Stephen? He's able to express his views, whether you agree with them or not, in a much more vociferous and forceful way.
Yes, and he has the scope to produce some quite decent talkback with readers ringing up and for an entertaining or somewhat fiery exchange of views. I think that 3 hours might be a little too much for readers who are not used to any sort of digital audio to stay for the whole time. And obviously, they don't have very many advertisements, so there's a lot of content, and I like reading The Sun, but then I don't think I want 3 hours of The Sun and its experts every day. But hey, you know, they've pioneered this area, so hat tip.
I think it also says something quite interesting about News International and their web strategy in terms of their papers, because John Gaunt said something about, it's all very new to us, this web stuff. And actually, it's not true. You know, that News International have been trying to get the web integration of sort of paper and online brands right.
They seem to have got
it
working now, though, don't
and
they?
And the interesting thing is that, of course, in the days of the early adopters, when it was, you know, your upmarket readers, all of their money was thrown at The Times. And The Times was the online property they were really pushing. And it's almost like in the last sort of 6 months, they've suddenly gone, hang on a second, we're going to invest money for The Times in the paper, and actually our big monetizable audience is through the web, is on The Sun, because we can get people to gamble, we can get them to pay for bingo, we can get them to join in with fantasy football,
they'll watch our videos,
they will watch our videos, you know.
Especially if you've got Page Three,
right. Yes. And I had not thought of that. Oh, and dear Deirdre's video casebook.
Well, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't tune in for that? She says, sorry.
so excited about Deirdre.
So excited about Deirdre's semi-clad models.
Well, it's possibly that's an idea for the Guardian website. Dear Emily,
we've got Mark Thomas and some video with some lesbians and Jack Straw in it today. Have a look at that.
I actually thought Guardian Radio could do Guardian Women's Hour with Emily Bell.
Yes, we could, couldn't we? That how brilliant!
I don't know why you're laughing. I think that it's, I intend to make in this organisation. I intend to make every hour Women's Hour.
Before we leave,
we could actually go a bit nuts on Guardian Radio ideas.
We could.
We?
We could.
What
we
would
could.
You do, Matt? What
I have no idea what I would do. I can't imagine. I was going to say just before we leave this topic, while we're talking about the Sun and radio, John, Chris Moyles wasn't too chuffed by their story at the weekend, was he?
This is that Moyles is out or will be out sometime around November, September or something.
Was the Sunsplash on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then he had this massive rant on air, didn't he?
He did. But it's one of those stories, isn't it? If you keep running the Chris Moyles is too old story, eventually he will be too old for Radio 1.
And eventually he will leave. That story will come true.
And it is slightly more true now than the point at which it was last run. I don't know whether there's any sort of particular... You know, Moyles has had a bit of a rough time, and he is getting a bit old for that audience, and they probably do need a refresh, but I don't know that those things are all related.
The nub of the issue, which Martin Kellner pointed out ages ago in the Media Guardian, was Radio 1 and Radio 2, what's the difference?
Absolutely. Okay, well, that's plenty of hot air about hot air for now. We'll talk more about the future of audio next week on the podcast. We'll be reporting from the Radio Reborn conference, and make sure if you want to go to that, that you register if you haven't already. I'll be chairing a panel consisting of Chris Tarrant, Ben Cooper, who's the Deputy Controller of Radio 1, and Moz D of TalkSport. So how long do you think we'll last before we're onto the subject of Chris Moyles, Russell Brand, and maybe even John Gaunt, of course, fired from TalkSport, you remember. If you want to register, the event is on Monday. Do a web search for Radio Reborn. And if you want to listen to Emily take on John Gaunt, the entire Radio Academy debate is available on their website at radioacademy.org. Now, while the Sun showed a bit of an innovation, as we were talking about, with the interweb this week, their web stats fell off a bit, didn't they, Brookie?
Yes, they're suffering now from the lack of Jade Goody stories.
Because they were number one the previous month.
Which was tabloid gold, not just for that website, but for so many of those papers, as you would have seen by the large number of front pages to do with Jade. And indeed, I think OK Now, about a month after the event, has still got Jade on the front.
Yeah, absolutely. Trebles all round though at the Telegraph, which is retaking the number one spot. Hats off to them. Although they did have a bit of Twitter trouble this week.
They did have Twitter trouble, though. You see, I'm
Schadenfreude.
No, not even just Schadenfreude. I think, you know, what happened with the Telegraph was that they set up as a widget on their site, which basically sort of brought in the Twitter feed. Which, if you use Twitter, it's the little, or if you don't know what it is, rather, it's the micro blogging platform where people post very short messages, and it's really sort of taken off now. You can identify the subject that you're twittering about by putting a hashtag, one of those little kind of, you know, sharp signs that you get on your keyboard. Yeah. Sorry, I'm now talking to people who probably don't even own a podcast. They are podcast listeners. They do know what a hashtag is. So you put hashtag and then subject area. So they did a hashtag budget. Now, anyone who put hashtag budget in.
Bumpus Willy Wank, that's what
Bumpus Willy Wank, exactly. Yeah. You know, cockpiss partridge. It was it was sort of inevitable. However, it's not just Schadenfreude and not just because, you know, there but for the grace of God. What I would say about the Telegraph is what they were trying to do.
It was a good idea.
Yeah. They were trying to reflect the social web, which is a good thing. Now, we've all tried to do that. We did it with a Google map of petrol prices, which took about probably slightly longer to be completely hijacked. And actually, you know, we learned from that as well. So, I'm not full of Schadenfreude. And I say congratulations on their figures. My position is lead will change many times and between more than one or two players.
My favourite of that Twitter... That Twitter
Man
trouble
UV
was
Liverpool, isn't it?
No.
ABCs.
This was Cripes on Friday, who appeared in the Twitter fall. It was called Twitter fall, which they did fix in the end. Dear Telegraph, I was shocked and appalled to read the words "fucking cunt" on your website today. All I wanted to do was read about the hashtag budget.
That is very good. We like that.
Yeah, very good. Well, very excitingly, Media Talk is now on Twitter. Well, I'm on Twitter, which is as good as.
I'm on Twitter too.
Yes,
I tweet. I tweet. Well. We haven't built our Twitter feeds that we said we would.
Well, no, but isn't it better to be on as our
as
personalities and our personalities?
Yes, totally. Mm.
Obviously, I never tweet it when I'm not on. So.
The last podcast that I did with you, Emily, where we talked about where we live, i.e. Finsbury Park, I got this very annoyed tweet from someone saying, well, I listened to you in the podcast. I'm actually now, you know, you only get 140 lines, so I'm banging on a bit. But it said, you know, how dare you talk about Primrose Hill for the entire podcast?
What about the rest of us?
Yeah, I had to reply back saying, it was Finsbury Park.
It's about the media.
Yes.
You know, as we know, we're trying to diversify into the regions.
Yes.
We and the government
so far,
trying very hard.
So far, we've got as far as Finsbury Park and Primrose Hill. But, you know, we've got to build out from somewhere.
Exactly. And we've now got a regional podcast in New York.
We have a reason. Yes, it's very good. Media Talk USA. Now, so you're Stephen D. Brooke, is that right?
No, I'm S.D. Brooke.
S.D. Brooke, and you're...
I'm Emily Bell, all one word, no capitals.
I'm Matthew Wells, with two T's. I don't think the capitals matter, you can still find it. Anyway, so there we are, follow us on Twitter. There were plenty of other media stories around this week, weren't there? Paul Dacre has been up in front of the Parliamentary Select Committee. You were there, as you were saying, Stephen.
I was, yeah.
How did it go?
Not very well for him, I don't think. He seemed a bit out of sorts. My take on these committees is that they're a bit useless and they're all a bit of a soft touch, but they were asking about press standards and privacy and libel laws, and he had a go at Justice Eadie, which he's done before at the Society of Editors, and he said that law firms are greedy like Carterack and Shillings, and that the conditional fee arrangements, no win, no fee, that everyone's making. He had one interesting story about the Mail on Sunday had a go at some MP who sued and won £5,000 damages. Because of the conditional fee arrangements, the total bill for the Mail on Sunday came to £520,000 because of the way that he said the law firms had just pumped up and they dragged out the case and they'd built in a success fee into it. And that this, you know, the Associated Newspapers, being the powerhouse that they are, could deal with that. But for smaller papers, particularly regional papers, he said this could really... He mentioned the chill winds blowing through the industry and that was a major part of it.
Elsewhere, Press Gazette has been saved.
Yes.
Hooray.
... again.
Yes. So who has saved it this time?
Step forward, Mike Danson, the multi-millionaire from Data Monitor, who also owns the New Statesman, and is clearly doing a bit of empire building. And a good buy for him because, you know, it's small but very influential, and he doesn't really own any other media properties that he can get into, you know, that there'll be a conflict of interest.
Yeah, and I was rather, I mean, I have to say, I was rather disappointed at the demise of Press Gazette. It was a goodish weekly read, the monthly magazine, a bit hopeless. But you know what? If you follow them on Twitter,
they have great.
They have varied their website.
You know, they have a great. I think the work that sort of Martin Stabe and Peter Kerwin and some of you know that they've done through their blogs and their online presence actually has been really, really good.
And finally, you were starting to, you know, and particularly, I suppose, they've a great story to cover with the demise of the press, the regional press, and they were able to bring in all their contacts, you know, and I think it all came together.
And actually, sort of, that's the great irony about it, really, in a way, which is that as a trade magazine, it was sort of at its best covering
the demise of its own trade.
Yeah, its own demise. And actually, you know, the Press Gazette sort of lived on classified ads for regional journalism jobs. You know, for many years, that was kind of its lifeblood and commercially. So you have this irony that actually at the time when you really, really valued their reporting, that they were going out of business. So I think it's an interesting buy for Mike Danson. Interesting that also he's got a background in data through Data Monitor, and you sort of wonder again whether he's going to use some of the kind of, you know, sort of possible kind of directories sort of, and, you know, the BPA awards, etc., and perhaps kind of, you know, pep up some of those aspects of it. But it'd be very interesting to see what he does with it.
And will stay as a monthly, it's not going back weekly.
No, a pointless rebrand of the week, of course, was ask.com.
I thought you were going to say Aviva. No.
No. That is ridiculous. Ask.com has gone back. And I should actually, if I'm not careful, that comes out rather rudely. Ask.com. They've rebranded themselves back to Ask Jeeves.
Yeah, they should have tried Ask Google.
Yes, that would have been a better name.
We all do anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, then. Finally, we should have a word or two, because we did mention it at the start of the podcast, on the budget and what it means for digital Britain. And I thought it was quite funny that all the commentators have taken against the budget, and you realise why, of course. It's because they're all on the... They're all earning over 150 grand.
All on the high salaries. They're all hitting the 50 calculating. That's right. They're £37,000 a year pay cuts.
But however, there was money for Broadband Britain, wasn't there?
There was. They, in fact, interesting, because of course the Treasury gets in there sharpish and says, you know, that switchover money from the BBC.
We'll have that.
And it can go over here to do this. So that was it, yes. So that's sort of, if you like, a bit of the Digital Britain plan.
And emerging. It's clear that the Chancellor, however desperately, is looking towards Broadband Britain to drive Britain out of recession.
Yeah, which is strange, because obviously we do need much better broadband infrastructure, and it can improve lots and lots of things. But however, quite a lot of our kind of, you know, employment crises around retail is because of, you know, shopping's gone online. Yeah. The media industry's disappearances because of broadband downloads. The music industry not in great shape because of broadband. So there are lots of industries actually where broadband kind of saps jobs and investment, but doesn't matter. It's still sort of very much the future in terms of connectivity and all of that sort of stuff.
Want to completely make a hash of the British economy, invest in broadband.
That's right. Yes, exactly. Give everything away.
Okay. Well, if you haven't heard yet, our top political and business brains give their take on the budget, make sure you check out our budget podcast at guardian.co.uk/audio. And we have been joined by Gareth McLean, the Guardian's TV writer extraordinaire. Hello, Gareth. Where have you been?
Well, you know how you never see me and Susan Boyle in the same room at the same time?
Yes. Well, where's she from? Bathgate? No, it's not Bathgate.
Whitburn, I think.
Whitburn. Isn't that near
Anyway, it's near where I'm from.
Yeah. Which is what?
Sunny West Lothian.
An area of the country where you're deeply familiar with.
I am indeed.
Are you one of those kids, Gareth, that used to ring her doorbell and run away? And
I was so thick, I probably just rang and waited. Oh, hello. Can I introduce you some clippers for your moustache?
So what have you been doing?
Well, Piers Morgan broke his restraining order against me, so I've been involved in a lengthy court battle. I've just been off.
I see. Now, you mentioned Piers Morgan, and you also mentioned what's her name?
Susan Boyle.
Refused to remember her name.
Britain's Got Talent. Yes. Yeah.
What do you make? What's your take on the craze that's been sweeping the country?
It's a bit of nonsense, isn't it?
Well, it's
nothing else to do. It's so gloomy.
It could be a bit of that. She's the biggest thing in the history of YouTube.
Well, no, it's just because she's not our notion of sort of pretty, and yet she can sing.
No, it's not. It's because she made people cry when she sang.
I make people cry when I sing.
Gareth. You don't even have to sing.
don't get downloaded 100 million times from YouTube for that.
XTube, perhaps.
That's okay.
But does this make the whole programme redundant now because she's going to win?
She's not going to win, is she? I think that Shaheen, despite the contrived nature of his entry, seems to be, you know, that's Wales versus Scotland, if you're looking at it geographically in terms of who'll vote.
Small people in Scotland, aren't there?
Yeah, but they're stingier, so they'll vote less times.
Anyway.
But they're more parochial and loyal. As this was proved in The X Factor with the McDonald brothers, who kept getting kept in touch. God, I know too much about this, don't I?
I think we need lectures in parochialism from an Australian.
That's amazing.
Microphone discipline, please. If you all talk over each other, nobody gets heard.
Yes, Matt.
It's BAFTAs this weekend.
It is. Well, first of all...
I'm just reading from the script here. What's wrong?
No, have you talked about ITV?
We have talked about ITV, yes.
So Michael Gray is washing his hands of ITV.
He is.
Does this mean it's pilot season?
Oh, I see. I've just had the joke explained to me about Lisa Benz in my ear, which is why I laugh belatedly.
Susan Boyle would have got that joke. She's up with the Bible reasons.
I want you to keep that one in.
Yes, no, absolutely, of course. Of course we will. We don't edit out any of your jokes, Gareth. Yes, very good Michael Gray joke.
Thank you.
We've ruled you out already, don't worry. Anyway, as I was saying, it's the BAFTAs this weekend. You have a personal involvement because you were on...
nominated.
You were a judge.
I was on the panel.
Well, you selected the People's Choice.
Yeah, I was one of the media experts that decided on the shortlist for the People's Choice Award, or the Audience Award, or the Philips Audience Award.
On the shortlist, Gareth?
The shortlist is, it's a bit of a random mix.
Anyway,
because it was a much heated debate. The Apprentice, The X Factor, Wallander, Skins, Outnumbered, and Coronation Street.
If it's the people's vote, then it's bound to be Coronation Street.
Well, I think Skins might win.
Do you think?
Well, they have that all kind of. They can mobilise a youth vote, can't they, online? You can vote online. And if you go to my blog, you can go and vote there.
Yes.
You can click through and vote.
And there's a hint. Have you endorsed?
I don't think I'm allowed to. Does that compromise my integrity? So I'm told by people who care about such things.
It hasn't stopped you before.
It's not a very high-end list, though, is it?
Well, you've got Wallander there. That's my... I think you do need a high-end drama on that. But yes, there were certain people in the room who wanted it to be strictly Dancing on Ice, the X Factor, The Apprentice, naming no names, Neil Midgley from The Telegraph.
I was just going to say Sarah Nathan from The Sun, probably.
She wasn't there.
No, right, that's my enemy. There you go.
I'll tell you what I watched. Wainwright Walks.
Oh, get with the programme, Stephen. That's been on BBC 4 before.
No, I'm sure it's very good, yes. Blood, Sweat and Tractors apparently is very good. I'm looking forward to that.
I watched that. It was the story of the change in British agriculture told through the medium of tomatoes, apples and strawberries.
My first job was on Big Farm Weekly.
Was it?
Yes. And indeed, I lived through the change in British agriculture.
You should have been a talking head on this documentary.
I should have been a talking head. I could
flushed as a pink lady.
Actually, we've missed the big TV return this week.
Hang on a second. Haven't you got some funny anecdote about Big Farm Weekly?
There isn't an anecdote that isn't funny about Big Farm Weekly.
That almost sounds like porn, doesn't it?
I know it does. It's a weekly about big farms. I didn't realize.
Well, it's not a big magazine about farms.
It's not a big magazine about farms.
Big Farm Weekly. But
was there a Little Farm Weekly?
No, there was obviously the nature of agriculture. They were not worth advertising to. But it's shut now because obviously there has been a great decline in agriculture. Yes. If you'd watched the first
time, the first time you said that you worked on that magazine, for weeks and weeks, I thought you were talking about Pig Farm Weekly.
That was the sport after lunch, on press day, which was to pick up the phone and go Pig Farm Weekly and see who noticed. And very occasionally people go, oh, I'm not calling about pigs.
Oh dear, well we seem to have...
My house, my mum always used to say, I've never met a poor farmer. There was some anti-farm kind of thing going on. But then she said that about dentists and people that own pubs and shopkeepers.
We seem to have strayed beyond our remit, haven't we? do you want to bring it back? Is there anything else about television that we've missed that we need to talk about?
Well, Ashes to Ashes came back this week.
With 7 million views.
I saw that.
Yes. I think this series is better than the last one. A lot of people don't like Keely Hawes, but she's...
Oh, I think she's very snazzy. Yeah,
And I like the arc in this one, and it seems to be a lot darker.
The arc? Yes,
she's bumped her head and gone back to
with the giraffe.
The year 34 BC.
Okay. Well, I think we should draw a veil there, shouldn't we? Yeah. The sun is shining, of course, so it's about time that we moved out of the studio and into the fresh air. To have your say on any of our topics that we've discussed, go to guardian.co.uk/mediatalk or post a comment on our Facebook wall. Remember, too, that you can still vote for us, The Guardian's podcast, that is, in the People's Voice section of the Webby Awards. You'd be a fool not to. My thanks to Stephen Brooke and Emily Bell for keeping it all on the straight and narrow this week. Thank you very much. And to Gareth McLean, too. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Media Talk is produced by Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. Goodbye.